Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17, continuing with verses 16 and 17. Verse 16 is the final verse of this little subsection of the chapter. It's the Maharaj Parikshit speaking to the personality of religion in the form of a bull, and he's just asked, who's the perpetrator? I'm going to punish him because this is the duty of the king, to give protection and to admonish miscreants, just like Krishna does. Pritranaya sadhanam Vinashaya Shaduskritam. So the king is to do the same, and one who fails to do so, previous verses describe, they bring ruination to themselves. Their good name, their duration of life, and the good rebirth and future lives finished. So, his concluding statement here, text 16. The supreme duty of the ruling king is to give protection to the law-abiding persons and to chastise those who stray from the ordinances of the scriptures in ordinary times when there is no emergency. So, this is the second time that Maharaj Parikshit is stating the same thing, primary duty of the king. Here's the previous statement. It is certainly the prime duty of the king to subdue first the sufferings of those who suffer. Now, that doesn't mean adiatmaka klesha, adidaivaka klesha, you know, the material energy stops being material energy. But those that are unjustly being inflicted, that's the prime duty of the king. And here, the supreme duty of the ruling king. So it's, when there's repetition, that means there's emphasis, right? So, Prabhupada, in the purport, discusses what is this sense of emergency or extraordinary circumstance. We find this discussed in the Bhagavad Gita in one purport, in the second chapter, where Prabhupada explains there's three types of duties. Prescribed duty, emergency duty, and preferred duty. You recall that? Chapter 2, text 47. And in all cases, the message, of course, in the second chapter is detachment from the fruits of one's work. So in prescribed duties, what's the purpose? It's not to achieve something, it's for one's self purpose, but to serve the Supreme, to offer something to the Supreme. He probably gives the example of a man that's working for a company. Say he's a salesman and he goes somewhere. and he's making sales. So where does the income for the sales go? It goes to the proprietor. But he's not the gainer if there's sales, or he's not the loser if there's not sales, because he's not acting on his own account. If he was acting on his own account, that says, I just made the sale, so this goes to me, then he's a thief. So one should not be a thief. One should perform prescribed duty because it ought to be done. That's rare in this world. People have that kind of detachment. But that's what Bhagavad Gita is recommending. And so when there's prescribed duty, and that's to be done, then you do it. And the spirit with which you do it is in the quality of goodness, because it's to be done. And the fruit, well, that goes to Krishna, because he's the person for whom we're doing things. If duty, a mature stage of a sense of duty is karma yoga, a mature stage of karma yoga is bhakti yoga. So you go back from bhakti yoga, at least, you know, do your duty. And do it with the spirit of detachment, with sacrifice under the Supreme, you go back up again. So there's two terms that Prabhupada has italicized in the purport. One is sva-dharma-stha. Sva-dharma, with hyphens between sva-dharma-stha. So sva-dharma, that's your duty, one's own occupational duty. And stha, one who is situated in, or one who is faithful in the prescribed duties. That's the sva-dharma-stha. But what about extraordinary circumstances? So you're cooking the offering, or you're doing the arti, or you're doing a prescribed duty and the house is burning down. What do you do in that circumstance? You do the emergency. Emergency takes precedence. And there's no fault for neglect of prescribed duty in the emergency circumstance, because it's an emergency. So there's another term that's mentioned here. Apad, A-P-A-D, apad hyphen dharma, apad dharma. That's the dharma or occupational duty at times of extraordinary happenings, extraordinary circumstances. Ordinary and extraordinary. Since the topic is about the protection of the cow and the bull, the Prabhupada gives the example of what's an exceptional circumstance where an elevated soul, a follower of Dharma, might not be vegetarian. So the example that's given is Vishvamitra. Vishvamitra, in extraordinary circumstances, in a situation of great danger, he had to live on the flesh of dogs. Horrible. So does that make Vishvamitra a dog eater? It's an extraordinary circumstance. One is not to be faulted. I gave the example yesterday, there's a biblical example that Christ ate fish, and there's no statement that says he ate fish, it says he distributed fish. And the circumstance was, it was the Sea of Galilee. I've never been there, but as far as I can understand, it's like a sea in the middle of a desert. And so, there's nothing to eat. And so to feed people was fish. So extraordinary circumstance. And then Prabhupada makes the comment, because Vishwamitra ate dogs, or because Christ distributed fish, or because of some extraordinary circumstance, therefore, it's authorized to open up slaughterhouses and eat anything. There's the ordinary circumstance that you don't. And the extraordinary circumstances where you don't want to, but you may. I'll give a couple other examples because it's good to understand, you know, where you draw the line kind of thing. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as strict as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was, said that when he sent his disciples to go to England to prominent sannyasis to go establish Krishna consciousness or the Gaudiya Math in England, and he said, even if you have to eat meat, that doesn't mean, hey, it's authorized, and then, you know, you go and do it. That means if the extraordinary circumstance arrives that even that abominable activity appears to be necessary, then it's authorized. Of course, it wasn't necessary, and it wasn't done. But that's just to give some understanding. That was the exception to the rule. Like, a similar example is the taking of sannyas itself. In the Puranas, it's described there are five things in the age of Kali that are prohibited. And one of those is taking the order of sannyas. And yet, Mahaprabhu took the order of sannyas. And following him, other acharyas in the age of Kali took the order of sannyas. So, Madhavendra Puri and Ishwara Puri and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Goswami. So, why are they violating the principle of Dharma? This is in the extraordinary circumstance, or our understanding is for the sake of preaching. That lower principle, which if one doesn't have sufficient qualification and faith, that lower principle is to be followed, there's a higher principle. And then that higher principle is to be followed. But if you're going to follow the higher principle, you better preach. You better meet the qualification and perform according to what that exception permits. And there's other examples, right, in nectar devotion, where there's vidhis of sadhana bhakti. Now, supposing somebody is on the bhava bhakti platform, and the exceptional state where they're overwhelmed in ecstatic motion, they may neglect some vidhi. They may not be there doing the arti. They're in ecstasy somewhere. So there's no fault for that sadharma being neglected. That's an exceptional circumstance. So one has to be very careful with apad dharma. And say, oh, this is an exception. And then whatever. It's not whimsical, Prabhupada. In that same Bhagavad Gita 2.47 purport, he speaks about capricious activity. Capricious activity is whimsical, just on someone's whim. And purports have already described, you know, the horrible consequences of someone, a king, leader, or someone, making decisions based upon their liking, not liking. I'll do this, I'll consider this to be my religion because I like this. And I won't consider what Krishna says to be the basis of my activity because I don't like it. prominent examples of that. So many scholars screwing out different meanings from all the scriptures of the world because they like it or they don't like it. And in the name of the scripture, then that becomes religion. But it's not. So one has to be very careful with this matter. Then Prabhupada also discusses from the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita the importance of not giving up your prescribed duty, even if there's flaws in your prescribed duty. Going back to earlier in Bhagavad Gita, every activity is covered with some type of flaw, some mistake. It's unavoidable because to err is human. So we make mistakes. So I should not do my duty because I make mistakes. I shouldn't chant Hare Krishna because I don't chant without offense. When I get to the offenseless state, then I'll chant Hare Krishna. Oh, okay. Well, how do we get to the offenseless stage? I'm praying to Krishna. And there's also the prohibition. There's the injunction. They're both injunctions. Don't give up your prescribed duty, even if there's mistakes, and don't take on another's duty, even if you can perform it without mistake. Okay, then why isn't that thing that I can do without mistake my duty? It may not be one's nature. How can I do something without mistake if it's not my nature? That's a good question. But nature, therefore, understanding what is one's prescribed duty, again and again and again and again, Prabhupada says it's assigned that you need to, someone who's giving you your prescribed duty. We should always be working under the authority of someone who is our superior. We accept it as our superior. We're working under. That's how one's Swadharma is determined. Like a nice example from Chaitanya Charitamrita is, it's a classic example. There were two brothers and a son from Srikanda. Very, very, very elevated Vaishnavas. Each of them pure devotees of the Lord. So Lord Chaitanya gave them the assignment. Raghunandan, the son, you engage in deity worship. Because he was so amazing in deity worship. So amazing in deity worship that he induced the deity to eat the offering so that it was gone. And his mother and father thought, maybe our son ate the offering. But then when the father, Mukunda, when Mukunda gave his son a ladu to offer to the deity and he watched and the deity ate the ladu, at least half ate the ladu because he was still full from the full offering. Then, so the deity dropped the ladu and that was Raghunandan. He was really good at deity worship. And his father was Mukunda Sarkar. Mukunda was the royal physician, and the king was being shaded by a peacock fan. He saw the peacock fan. And you know that from Chaitanya Charitamrita, right? No? Mukunda Sarkar was a royal physician. He was a physician, but he was a really good physician. So he was the physician of the king. So one day, he went to the royal palace and he was attending to the king's medical needs. And the position of the sun moved, and so the king was now exposed to the direct rays of the sun. So some servants brought out a big peacock fan. So now it would be pull the shade or maybe an umbrella, but this was a big, opulent peacock fan. Mukunda saw the peacock fail, he thought of Krishna. And when he thought of Krishna, he became so absorbed in thought of Krishna that he lost external consciousness and fell to the ground. And like, crash. And right in front of the king. Because the king was up on this high throne, high steps. The king got off his throne, down the steps, and Mukunda, are you okay? What happened? And after some time, Mukunda regained external consciousness. And the king asked again, Mukunda, what happened? And he said, oh, I have a disease, something like epilepsy. So sometimes I just lose consciousness and fall to the ground. I'm okay. Everything will be all right. But the king was very wise. He said, I don't think so. I think when you saw this peacock fan, you're such a devotee that you just became so absorbed in thought of Krishna that you swooned and fell in ecstasy. So from that time, Mukunda was recognized by the king as not just his physician, but an amazing devotee. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Mukunda, you go back, this is there in Puri, sending them back, you go back to Shrikanda, and you earn spiritual and material wealth. So, son, deity worship, father, spiritual and material wealth. Brother of Mukunda was Nadahari Thakur, or Nadahari Sarkar. So you stay here in Puri and you engage in preaching. You go stay with Gadadhar Pandit at the Gopinath temple. And you hear Srimad Bhagavatam from him, become very expert in Srimad Bhagavatam, and you become engaged in preaching activity. So that's a nice example. Same situation, three family members having three different services directly assigned. Now, it matched their nature. But it was assigned. And if it was, even someone may think it's not my nature. If it's assigned, it's your first time duty. So Prabhupada gave us, his disciples, so many things to do that when, you know, I was doing so many things and I was saying, hey, this isn't my nature. But that doesn't matter. If it's your prescribed duty, it's your prescribed duty. Well, I make mistakes. Well, even if there's some flaw, you engage in your prescribed duty. Krishna will help you overcome those flaws and those mistakes. But that's, you know, not just automatic. Okay, I can be unconscious and Krishna is going to correct my mistakes. No. One has to be very devotional, depending fully upon Krishna. And then Krishna, what's the verse in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Yogakshema Bahamyam. If there's some discrepancy, Krishna addresses it. Some shortcoming, Krishna takes care of it. But that's where one has faith. And that this message very nicely fits in with the next verse in purport. Although text 16 ends the section where Maharaj Pariksit has spoken to the personality of Kali, he's spoken to the bull and the cow. Text 17 is the bull or the personality of religion replies. And so there's a series of verses starting with 17 where he says, these words just spoken by you befit a person of the Pandava dynasty. Captivated by the devotional qualities of the Pandavas, even Lord Krishna, the personality of God, had performed duties as a messenger. It was like an ecstatic expression that it's glorifying Pandavas, is glorifying the grandson of the Pandavas, is glorifying Krishna. The words you've spoken are just befitting a king of your caliber, the representative of the Pandavas. And such personalities are so exalted that even Krishna wants to serve them. So here's how Prabhupada takes up this very nice purport. Prabhupada is saying that essentially Krishna will uphold the words of Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit made some very bold statements. So were those bold statements just hot air, meaningless, blah, blah, blah? No. Maharaj Parikshit said, even if a, Prabhupada's writing, the Maharaj said that even the denizens of heaven could not escape my stringent government if they were violators of religious principles. Who is this? Some king saying, I'll bring demigods to task. Boastful talk. No. He was not falsely proud, for a devotee of the Lord is equally as powerful as the Lord, or sometimes more powerful by his grace. And any promise made by a devotee, though it may be ordinarily very difficult to fulfill, is properly executed by the grace of the Lord. So, very important point. This requires purity and faith. Not, you know, the little pipsqueak devotees, and we say something and Krishna's got to uphold it because we said it, because we're devotees. Bhagavatam said it. So where one is very, very elevated, qualified, faithful, then the impossible becomes possible. Mahaprabhu said, the chanting of the holy name will be heard in every town and village. Okay, the chanting of the holy name, because he said it. Faith in the instructions of the spiritual master is the principle by which one can achieve vyavasayatmika buddhi, this very fixed intelligence, where everything that one, whatever considerations one makes is simply to fulfill that instruction, because the instruction will happen. It's just a question of who will do it and how it will get done. But the instruction is, the potencies are there for it to be done. And that's very nice for the faithful. So many things, so many amazing things happened in Prabhupada's time simply because he gave an instruction and somebody said, okay. You know, like, build a Rath Yatra cart for somebody that never saw one. Or carve a deity for somebody that never saw one. I mean, can imagine if you were given the assignment, you want to carve Jagannath, and we need it for the Rath Yatra festival coming up. How do you carve a deity? Or so many things. Go open a center. Go someplace where there's nobody and go open the center. And this is, you know, you've all had so much years of training, but this was going on where people had, you know, a few weeks of training. Go open a center. Or, you know, start a monthly magazine. Raise the money and, you know, do the whole thing, A to Z. Get the whole thing done every month. And then, you know, it goes from some hundreds to 1,000 to 5,000 to 10,000. Double it. How are we going to double it? Double it. Okay, we'll double it. Or, you know, print 17 volumes of Chaitanya Charitamrita in a month and a half. Impossible. That's language of a fool. You do it. But Prabhupada, no but, do it. And he did it. He did it. With faith in instruction. Or so you're going along in your life and there's some instruction. It's all odds against you to do it. But with the faithful soul holds on to the trust that there, that within the instruction is the potency to carry it out. And that's when Krishna's mercy comes to that person. And then they have these special realizations, how Krishna is so merciful. That's how we get, that's how we deepen our realizations. It's some risk taking in all of that. But like Narada, when he decided about Nalakuvera and Manigriva, he cursed them. And the curse was effective. But he also gave a benediction. And that is that Krishna would liberate them. So here's Krishna with his rope around his waist and tied to the grinding mortar by Mother Jasoda. And he looks at the trees and says, okay, Narada made a promise, now it's time to fulfill that promise. Because I have to uphold the word of my devotee. Or Brahma gave a benediction to Hiranyakashipu. You can't be killed this way, that way, that way, this way, that way. Okay, I have to uphold the word of my devotee. But he didn't say, half man, half lion. Ah. So, the Lord upholds the word of his pure devotee. Which is similar to the statement of the verse where even Lord Krishna performed duties to the Pandavas, like he became the messenger, or he became a bard as the procession for the Rajasuya Yajna was to take place. Krishna was in the procession, reciting the glories of the Pandavas. One night, this is, you know this from the first canto descriptions, but you know, Krishna one night spent the whole night guarding the Pandavas while the Pandavas were resting. I'll do the night watch. You take rest. And he was happy. So, what to speak of upholding the words of the devotee? So when Maharaj Pariksit was speaking, your words are fitting for exalted personalities, such as the Pandavas and descendants of the Pandavas. Why even Krishna, who is the personality of Godhead, he takes the position of the servants of such devotees, meaning implying he will see that the words of Maharaj Pariksit are fulfilled. In that sense, the devotee, the Maharaj Pariksit level devotee, never feels separation from Krishna in any circumstance. This is the very exalted position. That's how Prabhupada ends the purport. The personality of religion, Dharma, is thanking the king for being true to his exalted position, that exalted position being, you know, the grandson of the Pandavas. So a grandson of the Pandavas should behave like this, should speak like this, should perform like this. And then how does that apply to us? We're followers of someone of the caliber of pure devotional service. And so it behooves us to be good followers, both in word and in action. And Krishna will give his protection and empowerment so that difficult things become accomplished. This is the empowerment that one who has faith experiences. The just like that one who has implicit faith in the instructions of the spiritual master. This is the active principle of spiritual life. So one can get realization, like this question yesterday about deepening our convictions in things. It's one of the, if you want to deepen your conviction in things, there's some price to pay. And that price is faith. Just like in the chant, there's a very beautiful song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur where he's describing Lord Nityananda under the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu opening the marketplace of the holy name. And so he sets up shops. He gives franchises. It literally uses that word. He gives franchises to people to set up shops. And he says, okay, here's the rule. You have to charge a fair price for the holy name. And what's that price? Faith. And even if they have a little faith, give them the holy name. Give them the pure holy name. But with no faith, you can't give. So one who has faith, then they are entitled to realizations. And therefore, we should be very clear about what we're doing and why we're doing what we're doing. Not just, of course, you all understand these things, but I'll say them anyway for purification. Faith should not be blind. Faith should be with careful deliberation. And when in the association of those who have faith, one's faith can grow. This Nadia song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Shradhavan Dhanahe, where those that have faith can give it. And then there's a realization that comes with that. It's, you know, you're just an instrument. And it's nice. Very nice. Okay. Discussion or questions? Yes.
Why they have so much faith? What is like for us like attachments or something?
Yeah. Why did Prabhupada disciples have so much faith?
No.
Because of attachment. Yes, but why attachment? Because there was an object worthy of attachment. And Prabhupada was so powerful. I mean, there are devotees to this day who are followers of Srila Prabhupada that were never once in his personal association. Strict followers. So that faith didn't come from close first-hand examination, but reading his books and hearing his classes recorded and associating with those that had faith. And then they had faith and they nurtured that faith. So those same books, you have the same opportunity they had. And association with those who have faith, you have that same opportunity. There's no, you know, it was then, but that can't be now. Not so. Prabhupada was uniquely powerful, empowered, unlike. It's hard, you know, hard to make a statement that says this. It makes it sound like, you know, diminishing the significance of others. But It's true that Prabhupada was empowered to spread Krishna consciousness like no one else has ever been empowered to spread Krishna consciousness. He was empowered. So on that basis, faith. But how did he get that empowerment? We just discussed that. His faith. In the words of it, he told. I just had faith. My spiritual master said. If you ever get money, print books. I printed books. He'd go to the West. I went to the West. Beyond my expectation, things have happened. Of course, Prabhupada's expectations were very big. Or his vision was big. His vision was big. But whether Krishna will fulfill or not, that's up to Krishna. So, it was easy to have faith in Prabhupada because of his powerful, pure devotion. Some people were unable to recognize that. But some persons were just overwhelmed just being in his presence. Because of his empowerment, his purity. Something else? Well, let's look at that. Is it fact or is it fiction that the young American people that Prabhupada engaged had sinful activities in their past? It was fact. Another question. Fact or fiction? That the power of devotional service is sufficient to eradicate all of one's sinful activities in an instant. Fact. So it's not because of the sinful activities. It's because of our attachments. We don't want to let go of and give trust to. You don't want to let go of the negative and give trust to the positive. We're attached. Prabhupada was once asked, you've heard this before, but how long does it take to become Krishna conscious? And Prabhupada replies, less than a moment. And in that less than a moment, two things. Mental speculation, reject. Sense gratification, reject. Generally, people are attached to these things, and therefore, generally, you find the process is gradual. It's not our sinful activities that's holding us back, past sinful activities. Prabhupada was once speaking with a devotee who left his association and did bad things in his, you know, apart from or away from Prabhupada's association. And Prabhupada was, when he came back, and Prabhupada was at the same time simultaneously so joyful and thanking him for coming back, but is also chastising him. Why did you go away? And he was saying, and why'd you stay away so long? Oh, because I have so many material desires and I have so many sinful things I did. I was just ashamed. Then Prabhupada said, don't you know with one kick of my boot I can remove all those things? That's not our, you know, our sinful activities, is past sinful activities are impeding. Ahoituki pratyata yayatma supersihati. The power of devotional service is such that there's nothing that can impede it if it's performed without motivation, without material expectation, you know, just with a genuine desire to be again situated in our relationship with Krishna. That's simple. But because we have our issues with Krishna, we don't so much want that. Although we don't like the suffering. We still have this expectation that somehow I can enjoy. Foolish attachment to that conception. Enjoy apart from Krishna. Somehow. And hold on. Anything else? Okay. Should the Prabhupada keep dying?